Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. This is a weekly sports podcast. We like to call it the best couple of hours of your sports week. Thank you for tuning in. Again, I am your host, 12 Kyle. And again, this is Dead End Sports. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast. You can find this podcast just about anywhere where podcasts are given away for free. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. This is the place where sports opinions collide. Of course, I will not be doing this podcast alone. Joining me are the homies. First up, my man Beezy, 430. Beezy, what up, though?
What up, though? What up, Kyle? What up, fellas?
Chilling. What's cracking, man?
And I was working on the Is the Mike Stallone podcast.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, I'm taking a pause right quick because we're doing this. But, yeah, that's what I was working on. That's what I'm doing.
True indeed. True indeed. Also joining us is the homie FIFO. FIFO, what up, man?
Yo, what it do? What it do?
Can't call it, man. What's up with you?
Man, just glad I opened today, not having to close.
So that's right. And last but not least is the homie Ken. Ken, what up, man?
Nothing much. Chilling.
True indeed. True indeed. As I mentioned, man, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, man. Let's go ahead and get it cracking. Crazy sports week, as they all seem to be each and every week. So let's start there, man. A lot of stuff happened this past week. I'll start first with you, B. What stood out to you this past week, whether it be college basketball, football, baseball, Major League Baseball, or NBA or the NFL?
I mean, nothing. I guess, of course, the elephant in the room, college football. The you know, you had the conference championships this weekend, along with the announcements of the Final Four playoff team. So, I mean, you know, that was pretty much the main thing I was really glued to this past weekend. Cavs still streaking. Yeah, that's pretty much about it. College football and Cavs still streaking.
Okay. What about you, FIFO? What stood out to you this past week in the world of sports?
Man, look, I'm just glad at least one Georgia team out here doing something. we out here doing some things. I called it the beginning of the season. Let's go. We in the playoffs. They looking good. They got their revenge, which needed to happen. So we're guaranteed we in there. You know, I know we're going to talk about it later, but LiAngelo Ball, you know, no longer a UCLA Bruin. So that's going to be interesting because I don't care all of the shit talking that LeVar does. He did not see it going out like this. He didn't see Lonzo struggling, his middle child doing what he did, and plus out of college ball, and his youngest son not in high school ball. That cannot be the way he planned it. That's not how he envisioned it. So, but we'll get on that. B touched on it a little bit. The Cavs are streaking. That's cool. But you watching Boston, though? You watching my boy Kyrie and what he's doing out here? Okay. 21-4 the last time I looked at the records now. 21-4. So respect. Okay. You know, that's really about it. You know, I'm pretty sure we'll touch on some other things as the show go along.
True indeed. Ken, what stood out to you this past week in the world of sports?
Giancarlo Stanton. Possibly being traded. I think that's interesting. Shows a lack of loyalty. I mean, he had a monster season, which could be an anomaly because the year before that he struggled with injuries. And he is typically injury prone, but he had a crazy season. And I think he had damn near 60 home runs, and they want to get rid of him. So, I mean, sell high, right? So I think that's interesting. Wisconsin was overrated. We all knew that, but they tried to give them the respect for the record, Ralph, and we see what happened with them. The Golden State Warriors, man, I don't know what's going on with that team, but they seem off for some odd reason. They get into fights. Kevin Durant almost got beat up by DeMarcus Cousins last night, and he's been very loose. With the lips since he's joined that team, talking a lot of mess, getting in a lot of people's faces. We had Livingston getting in the ref's face last night. Like, Draymond actually almost seemed like the tame one, which is really, really weird. But, man, as soon as DeMarcus Cousins, because DC was like chilling, like he was cool. He was like, man, I don't know why you guys throwing me out. Kevin Durant's still talking and talking. And finally, like, DeMarcus just snapped. And that's when he started walking up on Draymond. I mean, Kevin Durant. And when the way he walked and the way, like, his body, the way he hit that stance, I was like, oh, they better get KD away. They better get KD away. And KD, you know, in the post game talking about, hey, man, ain't nobody going to fight in the NBA. That's incorrect. Because if there's one person that will fight in the NBA, it is DeMarcus Cousins. Let's 1, not get 000. That twisted. 1,000. Right. So, yeah, come on, KD. Last couple of things. Jimbo leaving. Kyle, that's sad. I liked him as a coach. So, yeah, but that's a hell of a contract he got. And the last is, you know, everybody's talking about Boston, Ralph. But you didn't say one damn thing about the Rockets. Same, what, four losses? Are they for real? Yeah, I don't know. But
but they don't have quality wins, though.
Neither does Boston.
And then these type of teams, we've seen them before. They're regular season teams, right? Like this is an offensive team. They still don't play defense. They play loosey-goosey. When things get tightened down, that's why Houston isn't a real contender. And Chris Paul has, like, that team that has not taken Chris Paul's identity. They're still James Harden's team. So if that's going to be James Harden's team, can they play enough defense to win in the playoffs? Boston is legit because they have the number one defense in the NBA. That's why it's different, Ken. And they have quality wins. They came back against Golden State, right? They come back. They're clutch. They win the games that teach you how to win in the playoffs. And come on, man. Don't make me teach you out here. I thought you was older than me.
Man, listen. Go now, don't sleep on the Rockets. They're eighth in points allowed. Like, it's not like they're slouches out here. You know, they beat the Warriors, too. You know, and they had to come back to beat the Warriors, right? So, I'm with you. I'm just saying, like, everybody's talking about Boston. And maybe because of the Rockets' past, we're saying we've seen this story play out before, so we're not going to give them the respect that they deserve. But
not just the Rockets. D'Antoni, James Harden, CP. Do you want me to keep going? They don't have nobody legit over there. What has anybody accomplished over there in the Houston organization?
And what has Boston accomplished besides Kyrie? He's the only one.
Danny Ainge put together the big three. They won a title first year. He duped Brooklyn into getting all of these picks. He manifested these picks into legit talent and to a legit superstar in his prime right now on a favorable superstar contract. And he got the next best coach in the NBA.
Who hasn't won anything?
But Kyrie has won something, and he has the moxie. And Danny Ainge has won championships as well. So he has the moxie as well. All I'm saying is there's championship DNA inside of that Boston organization, where I'm asking you, where's that championship DNA anywhere in Houston?
A king.
Ken, why you fishing? Why you reaching out here, man? Why
you
didn't
stretch arms off? You knew that answer was coming, man. Oh, man. Let's see. For me, mine is less controversial than you two guys. I'll keep it in college, man. Obviously, like Ken, you mentioned, the coaching carousel, if you will. Jimbo Fisher going to Texas A&M, subsequently leaving Florida State. Florida State hiring Willie Taggart. Scott Frost leaving Central Florida, going to Nebraska, where he was once a standout player. I guess the question that kept going around as these coaching moves were being made was, you know, did they make the right moves? You guys know I'm a Florida State fan. I wasn't necessarily sad to see Jimbo Fisher go. I think a lot of alumni have kind of, and especially the boosters, have been fed up with Jimbo, because Jimbo, for the last two, almost 3 years, every year his name has been swirling around in rumors of leaving, and he's, you know, parlayed that into contract extensions. So, you know, Jimbo kept saying, well, he wants, you know, this multi-million-dollar facility, standalone facility, just football facility, and, you know, that type of stuff. And Florida State, you know, hadn't gotten around to getting everything that he wanted. And, you know, let's just keep it real. Jimbo wanted more money. And, you know, they're paying him. He's got a 10-year guaranteed $75 million. So he is only second behind Nick Saban as far as college coaches, as far as getting paid. And the A&M Aggies, you know, they're going to roll out the red carpet. And, you know, they have the facilities. They have a brand new facility, a brand new stadium. They have all of the amenities that he wants. That being said, Jimbo Fisher's going to the SEC West. I'm going to remind you who's in the SEC West. Alabama and Auburn, and you got to play them every year. So at best, on the surface, it looks like, you know, Texas A&M is probably the third best team in the SEC West. I don't know if I necessarily would have left Florida State for that, but I mean, again, I hold no grudges, man. I like Jimbo, wish him well. I think Willie Taggart will do a great job, you know, at Florida State. I thought it was cool that Florida State, you know, mentioned that they wanted to hire a minority. And come to find out, I didn't, and Ken, I don't know if you knew this, but Florida State's AD is a brother. And so they hired another brother. So that's good. Scott Frost going to Nebraska, not surprised. I really wasn't happy with the way that it played out. If you guys were watching the game, Scott Frost's UCF Knights were battling in their conference championship game. And I want to say maybe 5 minutes before the game ended, you know, a little thing comes across the screen saying that Scott Frost had accepted the job at Nebraska. All the while his team is battling and, you know, trying to win this game. And I think that's bad business, man. I understand. And, you know, it's a sad reality that, you know, these kids, you know, these coaches, let's just keep it real. These kids, they go to play for the coaches. They go to play for the schools, but they also go to play for the coaches. And I got into, you know, a couple of discussions with people on Twitter, and they said, well, you should go to the school, you know, for the school. Come on, man. Let's keep it a buck. I mean, is the star basketball player necessarily going to Kentucky because it's a great academic institution? No, he's going there because of Coach Cal. You know, and the same thing goes for Nick Saban. If I'm going to Alabama and I play and I'm a defensive lineman, I know that Nick Saban can get me in the league. I'm not going to, you know, Arkansas State if I can go to Alabama. I'm just not. So, you know, it's a dirty part of the game. You know, these coaches can just get up and leave. And, you know, it's same for Willie Taggart. What's up?
But the school does have a little bit to do with it, too. Like,
it does.
It sounds like you're being a little bit too dismissive.
No, I'm not being dismissive. I think what it is, the school has something because the school has cachet. There's a big difference between you know, being a star defensive end playing at Alabama as opposed to playing at Alabama A&M. So, yeah, the school has a lot to do with it, too. But I'm saying primarily you're going there to play for the coaches. And I think where the problem comes in for me is that case for Jimbo Fisher, case for Willie Taggart, Scott Frost. These guys recruited kids. They came into these kids' houses, told their parents, hey, I'm going to, you know, take care of your son, make sure your son stays in school and graduates. And here at the first chance that they get, these coaches, you know, take these opportunities. And I'm not mad at them for having the opportunities to go elsewhere. I don't like the fact that the NCAA penalizes these kids for leaving if they chose to leave. And then they have to get, you know, permission to leave. You know, so for the kid who, keep in mind, I'll use Willie Taggart as an example. You know, he's only been at Oregon for a year. So there's a freshman on the team right now that he recruited. That kid that he recruited can't come with him to Florida State without having to sit out a year. Meanwhile, Willie Taggart can get his money, get his house, get everything that he wants and be in Florida and be chilling. I don't like that. That's the dirty part of NCAA. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later in my final thought. The other thing I want to talk about that stood out to me, and I'll wrap this up and we move into the first topic. This past Saturday got some really, really disturbing news. As many of you know, I'm a proud alum of South Carolina State University. Our basketball team, our men's basketball team, was playing against North Carolina State. And 5 minutes into the game, one of our guards, Ty Solomon, checked out of the game. He had been in the game for 5 minutes, checked out. Went to the sideline and he passed out. Not only did he pass out, but his heart stopped beating. He lay flat on his back in the arena, and our trainer had to give him CPR. Shout out to the EMS staff at North Carolina State who then brought a defibrillator over that he was doing. They were doing chest compressions. He was actually, his heart stopped, like I said, for 3 minutes. Luckily, he came to and, you know, they were able to revive him, take him into the locker room. He spent a couple of days in the hospital in Riley. And the basketball team continued with the game. They came back out of the locker room to a standing ovation. But in those moments when he was on the ground, you, all you saw was just players huddled around, players on North Carolina State, players on South Carolina State. Some players were crying because they didn't know if this kid was going to make it. Ty Solomon has undergone a battery of tests. They're not sure exactly what caused him to collapse. They're definitely not sure what it was that caused his heart to stop beating for 3 minutes. But that young brother is lucky to be alive. So I definitely want to shout out to the SC State trainer, as well as the EMS staff at North Carolina State University for saving that young brother's life. Because if he had been somewhere else, we may have a different story. So shout out and prayers to him, as well as the SC State basketball team as they proceed for the rest of the season. Moving on to college football. It's all set, man. We got the four teams. The college football playoff has been set. Clemson versus Alabama. That's number one versus number four. And number two versus number three, Georgia versus Oklahoma. There was a lot of debate as to who was going to get in. Some teams were left out after their conference championship, mainly Ohio State. It looks like it came down between Ohio State and Alabama. So, B, I'll start first with you, man. Did the committee get it right?
I mean, based off what they want to get the quote-unquote four best teams, I would say, yeah. I think what hurt Ohio State was they had two blowout losses by non-ranked teams. I don't know if the committee kind of looked at and took that into consideration or not, but I mean, I think I heard one of the ESPN analysts say, yeah, from my eye test, yes, I would say Alabama to me is a better team than Ohio State. So, you know, with that, I would say, yeah, they get in. You know, yeah, so I'm looking at the losses. Yeah, they lost to Iowa, a non-ranked mm-hmm. Iowa, 55-24. Mm-hmm. And they lost to Oklahoma, which, of course, is one of the final four. So that's a respectable loss. They lost 31-16. But that Iowa loss, I think that really kind of stained their schedule. But on the other hand, Alabama hasn't really played anyone really, with the exception of that Auburn loss. Mm-hmm. And of course, you want to say, yeah, you know, you got to win your conference championship to kind of at least be considered in. But just in my opinion, I just think that Iowa loss really stained them real bad. Give them credit, they did beat an undefeated Wisconsin team, which Ken mentioned, who was overrated. So you don't know if you can take that with a grain of salt or not. But yeah, I think they got it right as far as just getting the four best teams in. Yeah, they probably got it right.
Okay. FIFA, what about you, man? You mentioned it at the beginning with Georgia getting in. So it seemed like it was a foregone conclusion rolling into Sunday selection. The 1, 2, and 3 spots were already kind of picked out, if you will. But it came down to that 4 spot. So in your opinion, man, did the committee get it right?
Again, yeah, I think they did. I know Auburn has to feel sick to their stomach, mainly mm-hmm. because they beat 2 number one ranked teams. I think that was back-to-back weeks, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Georgia, then Bama. So, and then to lose in a conference championship and not get in, even though they beat back-to-back number ones, that has to be sickening. So I think that's the team that, you know, they're right outside looking in and they feel some type of way. But, again, I think B made the point that I was going to make, the eye test. Like, I go by my eyes. And when you look at it, these look like the four best teams in college football. So from that perspective, yes, you got to give it to them. You got to give it to them. I think they got it right. I think it's going to be a damn good playoff. And go Dogs. The state of Georgia needs something, man. We got to have no championship in a minute. We need something.
True indeed. Ken, what about you, man? It came down to, like you said, a couple of teams. FIFA makes a good point. Auburn was in the mix. Obviously, Alabama and Ohio State. Did the committee get it right?
Well, I didn't even think about what FIFO's point about Auburn. Like, you legit could have dropped them to fourth if mm-hmm. you wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. Because keep in mind, they lost to Clemson, I think, like the second or third week. And like FIFO said, back-to-back wins against, the number one team. So, you know, they had a case too.
Right. And Alabama wasn't playing, so you could have made an argument for them dropping to four because you lost to, at the time, the sixth best team in the country. So that's a, you know, beating two number one teams, barely losing to Clemson, and then, you know, losing to a team you had to play for the second time of the year. It's not a bad loss, you know. But I don't think they got it right. I just don't, man. I think if you're going to put value on a conference championship, then make that value count. And I understand everybody's using that loss to Iowa against them, and you can point to it was a bad game. It happens. They turned the ball over a lot. They got to a point where they couldn't catch up, but that was right off an emotional comeback victory against Penn State, and they just came out flat. Like, everything they had to come back to win that game went into that game, and then they just came out just not prepared. You can blame that on Urban Meyer. But we saw that when they played teams that deserve their respect, they won. And for me, Ohio State is always dangerous because of Urban Meyer, because of their reputation, and Alabama didn't play anybody. So when you look at Ohio State, last week 14, they were eighth. They played the fourth team, the undefeated Wisconsin team. Now, a lot of people, I didn't believe in Wisconsin like that, but like Ralph said at the beginning of the show, respect the record, right? So if we're going to respect the record and say they've been the most consistent team, the defense is real, everything is about this team, it has been about them being underrated, resulted in them being ultimately overrated. Like, they came out flat, and they almost pulled it off, but they just didn't have the talent to do so, and they got too far behind. But look ahead of them. Miami was seventh. They lost to Clemson. Georgia was sixth. They beat Auburn. Alabama was idle. They didn't play anybody. So because two of the teams ahead of them ended up playing 1-1, one loss, Alabama didn't play anybody, I think you could very well make a case to leapfrog them over Alabama because they – basically just stayed there. Georgia and Miami play. So Miami's naturally going to drop. Auburn's probably going to drop to what? Georgia's spot. So those are two spots because of their activity. You know, there was going to be some movement there anyway. So I think you could have realistically flip-flopped Wisconsin and Ohio State and given Ohio State the conference championship as a reason to get in and beating an undefeated number fourth ranked team in the country. This clearly was about Alabama, their reputation. If you guys want to say you want the four best teams, fine, you can make that. But I think sometimes the four best teams don't always get in. And I think if you're going to put value on the conference championships like they are or like they say they are, then Ohio State should have been rewarded, just like Penn State probably should have been rewarded last year when you think about it. But, look, everybody listening to this show that's been listening for a while, you guys know I hate Alabama. And, and when we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, what do we say? We've seen this story before. One of those four teams were going to lose. The committee positioned them in the perfect spot to make a case to put them in. As Joel Platt says, they cooked the books. They gave them ranked wins on their schedule to make it look better than what it is. They play freaking Mercer and a whole bunch of other whack opponents on their schedule. And every year they do this, where they'll have a weak schedule, they'll play a couple of ranked teams because it's the SEC, and then they'll get in. They don't really play anybody. And they get in off reputation alone. So I think it's right. Somehow, some way, they wanted Alabama in and they got it.
Well, I think we talked about it last week. I think, you know, it was – you could tell by the way it was seated that it was, you know, in the position. The cards were in position. But I will disagree, Ken. I think the committee did get it right. I think where they, I understand the gripe, and I, like you, I didn't really think about Auburn until FIFO just mentioned it, but I guess, you know, they had a, if Auburn had not gotten blown out by Georgia, I think you could make it, Auburn would have an even stronger case for still being in the top four.
But they blew out Georgia worse.
Right, they did. But, you know, it goes back to what we always say. It ain't when it's not how you lose, it's when you lose. And losing late in the season hurts. I think Alabama, I would put them in because I think you have to go by what Alabama, they play whoever's on their schedule. And Alabama, when they talk about
they the make strength the schedule of, though, right, Kyle? Don't they put together the schedule?
They
but
do.
That's a couple years in advance.
Yes, it's a couple of years in advance. And let me take you back to week one, Ken. Now, and I hate to say this about my squad, but that was the game of the year. That was Florida State. Nobody, think about how college football operates. Hardly anybody plays a head-to-head on a neutral field against a ranked opponent, let alone I think Alabama was one and Florida State was two coming into that game. Now, we all saw what Florida State, you know, Florida State finished to be a 6-6 team, but, you know, the first 3.5 quarters of that game, that was a nip and tuck game. And that's who Florida State was prior to the injury to DeAndre Francois, the quarterback. So Alabama, for strength of schedule, gets a lot of props for at the very least scheduling that game and then manhandling Florida State. Because you go by the committee, I'm assuming, went by what Florida State was at the beginning of the season and not necessarily penalizing Alabama for what Florida State became. Hell, you can make a case that Alabama exposed Florida State, but that's another story for another day. That being said, I think the loss to Iowa really, really hurt Ohio State. If they had lost to Iowa by 3 points on a last second field goal, if you put Ohio State in with a 2 losses, and you know that's their second loss as far as losing, you know, a last second field goal, I have no beef with that. But to go to Iowa and get your doors blown off by 31 points, you can't put Alabama on the same field as Iowa, and Iowa's going to win, let alone beat them for 31 points. And I think ultimately that's what came to bite Ohio State. And it's like you said, Ken, a precedent was set last year as far as conference championships. So, yeah, while Ohio State won their conference championship, Ohio State got in last year despite not winning their conference championship when Penn State had the same gripe last year that Ohio State had this year. So, you know, it's the committee at the very least has been consistent. Your conference championship matters, but it doesn't hold as much weight. So, you know, in the old system, in the old BCS system, you win your conference championship, you're in. You know, so it they've gotten away from it. So I think the way that it's formatted, yeah, you got to get Alabama in there. I don't know. I can't really make a strong case for Ohio State being in. And keep in mind, even in that championship game, Ohio State barely beat, you know, Wisconsin. So, you know, here it is. They're the 4 team. I just can't make a case for you leapfrogging Alabama when you won, but you struggled to win over Wisconsin. Now, if Ohio State goes into that game and blows the doors off of Wisconsin, let's say they win by 30, you get no beef from me. I put Ohio State in. But, you know, those teams look a little bit more even than they did, you know, Ohio State being the superior. In this case, you know, I got to go with Alabama. And of course, this set a whole bunch of people off, people talking about SEC bias and all of this stuff like that. But I think the 4 best teams got in. And, you know, ultimately the way that the system is set up now, man, you really got to go undefeated or at the very least lose one game and lose that game no later than week 7 or 8 of the season. Because if not, you're going to be in trouble. So we'll talk more as we get closer and closer to New Year's Day and those games. But I'm definitely looking forward to it, and it should be some great battles. Let's take it to the NFL. This past weekend, man, we saw some suspensions handed out left and right. Of course, we had a suspension last week, but that was for chain snatching and fighting. This past week, Rob Gronkowski, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Greg Ailola, I think that's how you pronounce his name, were all suspended for hits that they delivered on the field. The hits from Juju Smith-Schuster, he laid out Vontaze Burfict last night on Monday Night Football. And, you know, George Ailola, he hit, I think it was Antonio Brown, helmet-to-helmet hit as Antonio Brown made a catch. Burfict was laid out and had to be taken off on a stretcher, entered concussion protocol. Brown was not, you know, knocked out of the game, but he was nonetheless, Ailola was not thrown out of the game, but suspended for the hit. And then the hit that Rob Gronkowski made, defensive back gets an interception. He is laying on the ground defenseless. Gronk drives on him as he's laying on the ground, throws an elbow to the back of the head, knocks the guy out. He's concussed. And, you know, Gronk does not get thrown out of the game as well. So I'll start right there with you, FIFO, man. What did you think about these suspensions? Now, the NFL has already come down and said these suspensions will all be upheld. So each of them will be serving, you know, their one game suspension. Were the suspensions just, or you think it was too much or not enough?
Oh, man, I think Gronk deserved more because that wasn't in the field of play. Mm-hmm. They weren't, you know what I'm saying? Like, the play was over.
Yeah, he was laying down, out of bounds, exactly. Nonetheless.
Laying down, out of bounds, got the rock, you know, it's our ball, and then you come and do something. Like, that was super cheap. So, to me, that deserves more games because that's just not in the game of football. That's not any part of any type of rule. That's not a judgment call. That's you taking matters into your own hands and doing some vigilante really type stuff. So, that deserves at least 3 to 5, to me, 3 to 5 games. In terms of the other ones, 1 to 2 games I think is fair, mainly because it was in the scope of the game. When Juju Smith Schuster hit Vontaze Burfict, and then I thought it was karma. The first time when I first saw it, I was like, man, that's karma for all the stuff he did. That's neither here nor there. When Juju hit him, to me, that's a football type play. Yeah, he hit him a little high, but you know, if this was the 80s, the 70s, even the 90s, that's a legal play. That's a play on. There ain't no foul, no fine, no nothing. You know, so when that's a bang-bang play. I don't think that he was trying to be dirty, but then when you try, then when he taunts him, that's when he crosses the line. And that's when I think that you have to look at it and give him 2 games. I'm cool with 1 game for the hit. The taunting, I think that deserved a little bit. Because come on, man. Like, you know. But I also get it. Coming from a little wide receiver, knocking out a linebacker, you're feeling big about yourself. I get it. You know, so I kind of understand. 1 or 2 games, I'm cool with that one. In terms of Ailoka, that hit against Antonio Brown, it looks worse in slow motion. Because when you see it in slow motion, he didn't lead with the helmet. He led with his shoulder. But he only hit Antonio Brown's head. And the way it moves and then how he hits that ground, I was like, oh, my Jesus. This is why I can't play no football. All I needed was 1 year freshman high school. It was a wrap for me. I already knew it. I'm a basketball player through and through. Couldn't do it because hits like that happen all the time. All the time. And that right there, man, I think, again, 1 or 2 games. But that is one of the hardest plays to control. Because at the end of the day, the DB is taught, I know I'm not going to get this interception. I'm not going to get a hand on this ball. I need to knock this dude the hell out. And if you're flying that fast, you're just trying to hit in the vicinity with that shoulder. And unfortunately, Antonio Brown's head was just in the way. So that hit right there, man, I'm okay with 1 game. I'm okay with 1 game.
There it is. There it is. What about you, Ken? Those suspensions, man. George Ailola, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Gronk. Was the league too heavy, not heavy enough, or just right?
Yeah. I get Ailola. You know, I get that one. I'm okay with that one if that's what they want to do. Smith-Schuster? Nah, man. That was a good hit. That was a good hit. He laid out Burfict, and Burfict, we all know, has a tendency of doing that. the taunting was a little much. Maybe they should have ejected him, you know, from the game for that. I gave him a personal a flagrant or something like that. But nah, a hit like that, you gotta celebrate that. You gotta taunt him, you know, because he depleted him. Like, this dude was up off the ground. So I think that was a little much, man. I don't think he needed to be suspended for that one. Gronk, man, this dude has been getting away with murder for quite some time there.
Watch your words, Ken. Watch your words. You can't use murder in
true,
the Patriots
true,
again.
True. Gronk, man, he's been getting away with a lot of stuff over the years. Things that black players can't get away with, partying, you know, going on shows, doing all kind of crazy stuff. It's fun. It's, you know, he's such a fun guy. And for him to do what he did after the play was dead because he was upset deserves more than one game. Because you're telling me that what Smith-Schuster did in the course of play is equal to what Gronkowski did after a play was dead within, and you can both say both were intent, but his intent was different based on the events that happened before they occurred, right? So Gronkowski was upset that he didn't get a call. The ball was picked off, so he went and attacked the guy standing on the ground. You know, Smith-Schuster, you know, this is in the field of play. Like, they're running a play, running back's coming, here's the guy coming. Bam, I'm gonna hit him with my shoulder, clean hit, and then, you know, the guy's down. Like, I just feel like they're different, but it should have been more than just one. It should have been two. I mean, the guy launched himself, propelled himself into the guy's head. Now, the NFL say they care about, like, safety. He hit the dude in the back of the neck, right? In the back of the neck. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We saw what happened to Shazier when he got his neck got kind of smushed together. Like, that's a serious spot. That's the spine. What happens if, I don't know, he hit a vertebrae or something like that, and then all of a sudden this guy can't walk, you know? So we don't see a lot of plays like that on the field happen a lot. But anytime you got a chance to set a precedent, then you should. And I don't think Gronk should be any different. And the nerve of him to even try to appeal it. Like, what? Dude, are you serious? Like, white privilege ain't that, don't go that damn far. Like, what are you talking about? But hey, might as well try it. But, nah, he should have been at least two or three games. And I got to applaud Bill Belichick for immediately going out there and saying, hey, man, that's not how we do. And apologizing to the coach, because anybody watching this knows it's wrong. And for all of you guys on Twitter that actually had the nerve to try to defend this guy.
Who defended him?
Oh, there were people on Twitter defending Gronk. Oh, yeah, there were.
Stop.
Are you
serious?
For real?
Oh, yeah.
You can't defend that shit.
Yeah. It was. Yeah, it was a lot of people defending him, man.
I'm glad I wasn't on Twitter that day.
Wow.
I didn't even say anything. I was just like, y'all must be Patriot fans. You know how they do.
Still, man, wrong. Dirty is dirty. Wrong is wrong.
Patriots been doing dirty and wrong stuff their whole since Brady got in the league, B.
What's your take on it, B? What's your take on those three hits and the suspensions that followed?
I actually just saw the Gronk hit. I didn't see the other two hits.
How the hell you didn't see the Gronk hit?
I said only hit I saw was the Gronk hit.
I didn't see
the other ones. I mean, the ones that when I was watching SportsCenter, the ones they kept replaying was the Gronk hit. So I didn't even see the other hits. So. But yeah, I mean, you know, as a fantasy football player that has him on his team, I'm like, what are you doing? You stupid. Now you costing me a playoff win. But on the
always comes back to fantasy.
I know, but on a serious note, you know, I'm just glad that guy didn't seriously get hurt. Because like Ken said, he went for his neck. What if he would have paralyzed him and dude wouldn't be walking? You know what I'm saying? So that part right there was the serious, that's not funny thing. And just like Ken, I was like, man, I hope that dude, he better get a suspension. He better get something. You know, even though I wouldn't like it as a fantasy owner, but I'm like, he better get something. They better lay down a law. I personally think he should have got maybe two games, you know, instead of just one. I thought one was a little bit of light work, but you know, that's neither here or there. I'm pretty sure the Patriots fans is listening. It's gonna hate me for that, but I don't care. But yeah, I just think the grunt hit was just a little too much, man. Like people said, the dude was out of play, and then you just go come from behind and just whack him like that. That's crazy. So yeah, that was a bad look, but a good look on Belichick to step in, like Ken mentioned. You know, to show that hey, you don't get down like that, baby. So, but yeah, I just think Gronk should have possibly got two. If you really want to set an example on, you know, making dirty hits like that, you're just not supposed to do that.
True indeed. I think the Iola hit, it's a bang bang play in college. You know, they'll throw you out for that kind of hit. And the NFL probably should adapt the kind of targeting rule that they have in college, but these players are so big and so fast. And to be honest, you can't afford to throw out stars of the game. So, you know, that's not going to happen. It's a bang, bang play. Haven't played receiver. You know, luckily I hadn't taken a lot of those hits, but, you know, like FIFO said, it looked a lot worse in slow motion. But I cringe when I see guys lead with their head, because we all played football, and when we were taught to play football, and you know, we're older than the kids, and I call them kids, who are playing football now. The first thing that you're taught when you're taught how to tackle is you're taught to hit what you see and to see what you hit. And even in the case of my man who hurt his neck, for Pittsburgh, you know, it's a case of him, his head was down. And of course now this wasn't an illegal hit or anything like that. Ryan Shazier, that's what I'm talking about. You know, Shazier, his head was down. So his head, he was looking at the ground as he was striking the play. And that's why his neck bent the way that it did. And, you know, if you're a certain age, and maybe most of the people who are listening to this podcast probably don't remember Daryl Stingley, you know, back in the day, getting paralyzed. And so we had those, or Nick Bonacani's son, getting paralyzed on the football field just from, you know, hitting someone with your head down and snapping your spine. And it looked real scary out there last night, because he did that and he was laying on the ground and his legs were not moving at all. And so when you couple that with the hits, you know, that George Iola had, and then the hit that Juju Smith-Schuster had, I ain't gonna lie, I used to love that hit. I used to love that hit. We practiced that hit when I played football in college, and I remember I hit somebody like that one time in a game, and I'll never forget a real quick story. The guy was a defensive end. This guy had to be at least about 6'5", 275. And I peeled back. He was chasing after our running back. I peeled back and I put everything that I had into my little 175-pound body into that hit. And I laid him out and I stood over him just like that. And he wasn't knocked out. But when he got up, he said, "Number 12, when I see you, I'm going to kick your ass after the game." He said he's going to kick my ass after the game. So naturally, I was trying to hide from this dude after the game. Fortunately for me, he just came over and gave me dap. But the moral of the story is, I used to love that hit, man. In football nowadays, when I see that hit, all I see is concussions. All I see is these guys 10, 15 years from now struggling from, I mean, like, I cringe when I see that kind of hit now, man. It's just, I'm thinking long term now. And I didn't think like that when I was 20 years old. And I, obviously these guys, they get paid well, they get paid a lot of money to play a kid's game, and they're, you know, trading on their bodies. And I get it. was the suspension justified? It's kind of, I'm in the middle on this because, like, I think, Ken, you made the point. A couple of years ago, that was just a regular block. Like, you wouldn't even getting a flag for that, let alone for him to get suspended. I think if Shazier doesn't get hurt in that game, maybe we don't even see suspensions for the two of these guys. Gronk, boy, they really let Gronk slide on this one, man. I think Gronk should have gotten three. I said get him three games, let him appeal, knock it down to two. You know, the fact that he appealed was, I mean, he had a lot of damn nerve to be appealing when, and then, and I don't know if you guys caught it, but like after the game, they asked him why, and he's almost, it's almost like he was trying to justify why he did it. There's no justification for that. That was dirty.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, he was like, well, you know, DBs have been pulling on me all year, and I just got frustrated. There's not, the perfect way to explain that is just, look, I lost it. I lost my cool. I'm embarrassed. I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. That's all you can really say. Anything outside of that sounds like an excuse, man. And he was almost, if you listen to his press conference, he was almost borderline defending what he did. And I know he was answering the question, but he could have answered the question a whole lot better than the way that he did. And, you know, and don't get me wrong. I like Gronk. I don't like the Patriots, but I like Gronk. But he really should have gotten three games for that because that was Bush League. That was dirty. There's no place. You always hear players talk about, well, there's no place for such and such in our game. There's no place for that. This guy was laying on his stomach. He wasn't even paying attention to what's going on. Gronk got a running start and dove into it. And keep in mind, Gronk is 6'7", 275, throwing all of that weight and an elbow to the back of the neck. And then now this guy's in concussion protocol. You know, so it's he should have gotten three games at the very least three games because that's how you send a message. But that was Bush League as hell. And if I'm that guy's teammates, I'm kicking their asses for not fighting Gronk. But then again, you know, Gronk 6'7", 275. Maybe they didn't want no smoke. I don't know. But nobody stepped up to fight Gronk. Somebody should have swung on him or something, at least kick him in the knee. But I digress. But yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But as of right now, all of these suspensions have been upheld, so they will all be sitting out this upcoming week. FIFO mentioned a little earlier, the balls are back in the news again. As the ball turns, we talked about LeVar Ball and his family. It seemed like about a month or so ago when LeVar announced that he would be pulling LaMelo, his youngest son, out of high school, out of Chino Hills High, to be homeschooled. Now, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, he has made a verbal commitment to UCLA. But the big news came as LeVar Ball has removed his son, LiAngelo, who is a freshman at UCLA. You all familiar with the story. LiAngelo was in China with his basketball team, got caught stealing some sunglasses from Louis Vuitton, spent some time in jail, I guess a day and a half in jail, and the rest of the time was in a hotel in China. Subsequently came back to the United States. And we talked about it when they came back. They were suspended indefinitely. But LeVar thinks that, you know, UCLA has really taken the suspension too far. And he looked at the possibility of LiAngelo missing the entire season. And, you know, he's quite fed up with it. So he has pulled LiAngelo out of UCLA, and he said basically he is going to prepare himself for the draft. I'm going to throw this to you, FIFO, because I've never seen LiAngelo play. What's next for this kid, and is he a NBA prospect?
If you let the scouts tell it, they don't think he's an NBA prospect. Some people don't even think he's good enough for the G League.
Wow.
Me personally, I always thought he was the weakest one out of the three. I think LaMelo's going to be the best one. But I think LiAngelo is a NBA basketball player.
Wait a minute, you think LaMelo's going to be better than
Lonzo?
Lonzo? Yes. Really? Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Because what Lonzo's doing right now, LaMelo, he doesn't have that mentality. He's not pass first. He's, I'm going to go get buckets. So when you have that type of mentality, that's just different, you know. You could go out there and if you get buckets, you get buckets. But when you try to get other people involved and, you know, you may not have other parts of your game developed enough to help in that, that's difficult. But when you get buckets, it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to get buckets. So, but that's the reason why I think LiAngelo is a NBA basketball player, because he gets buckets too. You got to remember, the way that these three guys played together in high school, Lonzo was the athlete that could run up and down. He got a lot of alleys and stuff. But all he was trying to do was just pass the ball ahead, play fast, hit the kick whenever they hit him back, hit the step back three. LiAngelo was a bully. He knows how to use his body. I like that about him. He does have touch, and this man can catch and shoot. If you can catch and shoot in the NBA, especially right now, there's a job waiting for you. So to me, teams like the Atlanta Hawks, the Philadelphia 76ers, they need to look at this guy. They need to look at this guy for real.
Okay.
And the reason,
okay.
And the reason being is because of their system. Mm-hmm. The way that they pass the ball from left to right. If Kyle Korver is in the league, LiAngelo can play in the league. You know what I'm saying? Because he's that style of player. He's not going to beat you one-on-one. He doesn't have handles, doesn't have moves, but he can get open. He can create enough separation for his moves. But he's not going to dominate. I don't think he's going to be 20, 25-point scorer in the NBA. I think he'll be low to mid-teens, if that. I don't know if he's going to be a starter because he has to work way – he has to improve way on the defensive side. We know in the NBA you got to be able to guard your position.
Oh, definitely. And
we'll see. We'll see. But I think he has enough skills, enough talent, enough shooting ability that any team would want his services. Now, that comes with the LeVar Ball and the Big Baller brand and everything that comes with it. So obviously you have to have the type of organization that can handle that. Similar to the Lakers, because now nobody outside of Laker guest can be allowed to be interviewed now, right? So that's the LeVar Ball rule, which I'm okay with. But
wait, explain that again, because I heard about that, but I didn't read up on it. So basically, how does it work?
Basically, no guest of an NBA Laker player can be interviewed. So only Laker players can be interviewed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, but those are the type of things that you do. You nip things in the bud. You know, you don't let things fester that are issues and problematic. So I think that if he goes to a strong organization, I even think San Antonio can use a guy like him. I think he's going to be like a Danny Green guy. He just has to buy in on the defensive side. He has to work. We saw that he got his body right before the season. So if that's in any indication of the type of work ethic he has to try to make the next level, I think he can make the next level. And I also believe that it'll probably be in his best interest to get drafted in the second round or go undrafted. And the reason, and I said this a couple weeks ago, you get to the money quicker. Ask Draymond Green. Ask Paul Millsap. You know, you get to sign a larger contract quicker because you have less guaranteed years. So it may not be bad. But at the same time, like I alluded to earlier, this cannot be the way that LeVar Ball envisioned everything happening and going down. I know he still says that all three of his boys are going to play for the Lakers. We'll see how that happens. we'll see. I don't. Hey, you know, but there's no way in hell that this is the way you envisioned it or you had it planned out, where your eldest and supposedly the best one out of the three is struggling. The second one doesn't even play in college. And the third one is not even in high school. So I just, that's not how it was supposed to go down. But this is the beauty and the genius of LeVar Ball. It doesn't matter. Whatever he does, he's built the hype machine so big that whenever he makes a move, it's going to be documented. People are going to talk about it. It doesn't matter anymore what his boys do. The brand will live on. The other two will get in the NBA somehow, some way. And as long as at least one of these guys is a legit star, Big Baller Brand is going to live on forever, man. And he's going to pave the way for a lot of new business models for these kids coming into the league. You know, it's just shaking it up, man. And that's the aspect of it I love. I don't like the fact that he's teaching his kids whenever there's adversity. Oh, don't worry, Big Daddy got you. I'm going to just pull you out that fire. Nah. Sometimes you got to deal with that stuff. That's how you learn, you know. But outside of everything else, man, LiAngelo's going to be a NBA basketball player. LaMelo's going to be the best one. LeVar Ball is the big baller brand. And life will go on. You know, we still live in Atlanta. Everything's going to keep turning, man.
Okay. B, what about you, man? the big baller brand strikes again. LiAngelo is, like I said, he's not in school now. He's going to be, I guess, preparing for the NBA draft. What's your thoughts on this kid, man? Do you think he has a legitimate shot at making the NBA? I know I saw a quote from Woj and Steve Wojnarowski from ESPN. He said that he's not even on anybody's radar.
Yeah, I've never even seen dude play. So I don't know if he's that good to where he can still make the G League. Or, I mean, I guess he must be somewhat good if he's able to play in the college level, but we haven't had a chance to see that because, you know, I completely agree with FIFO, though, man. Like, him taking his sons out, it's just like, just because he's showing a little bit of adversity doesn't mean you just get up and quit. The same way when he walked out and quit because the refs wasn't calling the calls. It's just like, you showing that when things get rough, just tuck in and go. And, I mean, that should not be the case. I don't like that message that he's putting out to not only his sons, but other young, you know, high schoolers or young guys playing basketball thinking that that's cool. But, yeah, I don't know. I think he, I mean, of course, clearly he's the wackest out of the three. you know, I ain't gonna say wackest because I've never seen him play, but obviously I guess he just don't have the personality like
that. Right. I know what you mean. It just sounded funny.
No one's never saying, ooh, man, check him out. Like, at least you're hearing something about, you know, Melo and Lonzo, like, oh, man, you need to check these guys out. No one's saying anything about LiAngelo. Like, no one. So that, I mean, I just assume to say the dude is all right, you know, like, he might
be. But you know what, B? They don't mention him because he's not as flashy as the other two were in high school. But he led the state of California in points per game. The man was averaging 30-some points a game. And obviously they play a fast pace. They shoot up a lot of threes, but the man can score. He scored, I think he holds like the number three and number four all-time points in a game record. You know what I'm saying? I think he's on the top 10 list like two, maybe three times, scoring into the 60s and 70s. Obviously LaMelo scored, what was it, 90 something? So I think he's like number one or number two. But you know, like he gets buckets. He gets buckets. And you already know when you're playing with on a squad, not everybody can do everything. Some people gotta just be a shooter. You know what I'm saying? That's what he was, and that's what he's good at. And yeah, he may not be on the radar, but it's not that he can't play, and it's not that he can't shoot. And when you can shoot how he can shoot, somebody's going to give you a look. Or even
can he shoot that good?
He could shoot that good. He's knocked down. You ain't got to question it. He's a knockdown three-point shooter.
I'm going to see if they believe it.
He has the most normal jump shot out the three.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a believer.
Okay. What about you, Ken? LiAngelo, man. The big baller brand is moving on. They're taking, you know, I guess you could make a case that LeVar took his ball and he went home. What's your thoughts on this kid and what's next for him?
This is a black show, right? There's not a lot of black sports shows that really, black people that really cover like sports. Like us, right? Not
to keep it a buck like we do. No,
right. This is a black show. I want to, because I think I need to put that qualifier out there when I say what I'm gonna say. Because one of the first things that came to mind when I saw this was, I could tell he's not married to a damn black woman, because ain't no way in hell.
I was thinking the same thing, like. A few days ago, I said, man,
you feel me?
Married to a black woman. Oh, my God.
Ain't no way in hell.
No way.
She going to let him pull that boy out of a free education.
Yep.
College. He'll hear about that every day. Every day. And I was like, you can tell. That's how you can tell he married to a white woman.
Yep.
Because that shit ain't going to happen in a black household. Nope. Y'all know I'm not lying, man.
You know, black household like we know.
Man.
Nope.
Man, hey, you walk in that house, especially if you don't go to the league, yo, no league having ass son LaMelo out here. Look at him sleeping in the bed. But your ass want to take him out. He could have got a free college education. But no, B big ball of brand. That's what you want to be, huh? Big ball of my ass. Nah, man. But, you know, for me, man, I think we're starting to see, like, LeVar Ball is starting to – everything is turning against him now. And this is the end of it. I disagree with Ralph when he says that because of the hype machine that he's built, that, you know, he's going to continue, that he'll be able to continue at this pace. I think this may send him on a downward spiral, because when you try to say that when you got back to America and that you everything should be good and all should be forgiven, honestly, I think Trump may have been right. He is ungrateful. And if you're going to pull that kid out of college after what they did for him, it shows. And I hope he don't ruin that kid's college future, man. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm like you, Ken. I don't have a lot to add. I think that's funny. I think LeVar, man, I would never particularly a parent who I think is doing, you know, what they feel is best for their children. And as long as they're not doing nothing stupid, you know, I'm not going to tell the next man how to raise his children. You know, LeVar Ball has three sons, and so do I. How he's going about it, and I mentioned this on other podcasts, how he's going about it, I wouldn't handle it with my three sons, but my three sons aren't in the position. But if they were in the position that they were in, you know, I think at some point in time as a parent, you have to kind of let go and let them kind of figure some things out on their own. I don't necessarily know that. Let's say LiAngelo had to sit out this year. Would it have hurt LiAngelo to sit out this year, come back next year, you know, be dope, you know, let people see what he can do and then take his talents to the NBA as a sophomore? I don't think that would have been, what's the rush? The NBA is not going anywhere. You know what I mean? And I think if he's not on a guy like, you know, Woj's radar, you know, maybe another year of college ball would help him, you know, to be that. Maybe a run in a tournament. I think, you know, I enjoyed the the interview that he had with Cromo a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, man, I think LeVar, this is, he's been very, I guess, his steps have been in the right direction, I guess, if you will, leading up to this point. Or I could see where his steps were going. This move, I don't understand. You know, I kind of gave him some slack for pulling LiAngelo out of school. But, LaMelo out of school. But this doesn't make any sense. Because, yeah, you can go get him ready for the NBA. But, you know, he may not even get an invite. And then this is a year of him not being able to play competitive basketball. And, you know, there's a strong belief that, you know, Steve Alford and UCLA will wash their hands of, you know, the Ball family altogether, because there's some serious questions as to whether or not LaMelo will even be eligible to play college ball at UCLA, even though he's verbally committed to go there. But, you know, with his ties to the Big Baller brand and everything like that, his amateurism may be in question. So, you know, Steve Alford could be done with the Ball family altogether, you know, in one fell swoop. I wish this kid well, man. I hope, and we've talked about it before, man, I just hope that the kids are okay with what their dad is doing. And I know, you know, we all have fathers and uncles and grandfathers, and you know, we look up to those men, and those men help mold us in our lives. But, you know, these are decisions that you have to live with for the rest. I don't want these dudes, you know, to be 20, 30 years down the line talking about, man, I wish daddy had done it like this, or I wish daddy hadn't gotten in the way. I could have made it, or I could have made something of myself, and harbor, you know, some type of resentment towards, you know, LeVar. So we'll see how it goes, man. This is a bizarre move. I don't really understand it. And you know, I heard a little bit of his interview today, and you know, he almost went as far as blaming the UCLA coaches for not chaperoning the players for shoplifting. I'm like, come on, LeVar, come on, man, really? chaperoning. These are young adults. They, you know,
it's like he's blaming everyone.
Yeah, he's blaming everybody. Like, you knew your son knew what he was doing when he took those shades. You know, and you know, one thing I tell my kids, and I would say this to any parent out there, you know, never absolve your kids when they're wrong. When they're wrong, they're wrong, and let them know that they're wrong. And that doesn't mean that you don't love them, but you're not going to uphold them when they're wrong. And he was wrong as two left feet. So, you know, I don't know, man. I just, LeVar, this one's weird to me. I don't know how this one's going to shape out. So, moving on, staying with the NBA. Ken, you mentioned a little earlier, Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's been in the news a lot here lately. Like you said last night, he almost got into a fight with DeMarcus Cousins. So we got to talking, and I think Ken threw the question out about Kevin Durant underachieving as opposed to, you know, a question as to his career. You know, so I guess the question is, do you think he's underachieved to this point? Ken, so since you had the question out there, what's your take on that? What do you think about Kevin Durant's legacy and where he is as far as whether or not what he's achieved thus far?
Okay. So Kevin Durant, obviously, when he came into the league, like, I watched him play in college, one of my favorite players. I couldn't wait for him to come into the league. Always felt that he should have been – Portland should have took him over. Greg Oden hit the stage, 20 points, rookie year. And all the way up until that, you know, about his third year, he was, what, putting up 30. We just knew Kevin Durant was going to be, like, the second best player in the NBA. He was going to get Nets. Like, he was coming for LeBron's crown. And there was a time when people were saying that he was better than LeBron because of everything that he could do on the court. And he played in the finals. He lost to LeBron. Continued to have good seasons. But it almost feels like even though he got a ring, he got a participation ring. And I'm thinking, like, man, this guy – basically should be the best player in the league. And yeah, he has a title. Yeah, he can ball out and everybody knows his talent. But it almost feels like he didn't maximize it. And I know that sounds weird. I know it sounds weird because people look at the accolades and the stats. But I'm like when I think about Kevin Durant and the abilities and the talent and the, like, he could do everything. Like, I'm thinking, like, bro, we should be talking about you in the same breath that we talk about MJ. Like, you're supposed to be leading your team to multiple titles, back-to-back titles, three-time title, not jumping on a squad, somebody, it being your squad. OKC was that. And it feels like he's underachieved. Like, the only way he was able to get a ring was to go join a 73-9 team. So, I don't know, man. It just feels like he took the easy way out. Am I tripping?
No, you're not tripping. You're not tripping. He took the easy way out, but that does not mean he has not maximized his abilities. He has maximized his abilities. And remember the conversation we were having at the Denim Hip Hop shoot. LeBron has never had an iconic coach. Neither has Kevin Durant. And I think that's big in basketball, man. I think that because it is individualistic because one guy can change the tide, a la LeBron, a la MJ, right? Like those singular figures, AI, you know what I'm saying? Like, those guys can just propel you because they're that great. They affect that much of a basketball game. But at the same time, you need that coach to help manage everything else. Because as a star player, you can do but so much, right? But at the end of the day, you can't control the other guys. You can't put the other guys always in position to succeed, right? Like, that's why I always say basketball is checkers and chess. Like, the checkers is in the game, but the chess is the game plan. It's the foundation, the fundamentals. How are we going to attack? What are our principles, right? And when you watch LeBron, it's always been LeBron-centric. KD's career outside of Golden State has been KD-centric. Instead of, even though the Jordan and the Bulls were MJ-centric, but it was spread out, right? Like, John Paxson hit big shots. You know what I'm saying? Everybody understood what their job was. It wasn't just on Jordan. Here, Jordan, like, just do everything. He did that, and it didn't work until he got Phil. Right. And if you look at all of the other greats, they've had guys to put them in position. Steve Kerr is going to go down as one of the greatest coaches to coach in the NBA. It just, it is what it is. And right now, he's a top three coach in the NBA. He's going to be an iconic coach. KD is now getting that. KD alluded to that the first year in Golden State when he says, man, these guys do so many things different here, right? Like, he had to get accustomed to that. That speaks volumes because nobody has been able to maximize his talent in that way. Now we're starting to see that. Now that's why he's blossoming. But I understand where you're coming from, where it's he had to join the gang already. The gang was already assembled. Yeah, they could be better with you, but they don't need you. He needed to go right to a squad. And I understand when you're that type of generational talent, you want to be the foundation, the glue, the first piece of the puzzle. But that puzzle requires a lot of different pieces, and the front office is heavily involved. And Sam Presti did a damn good job, but he just was never able to give him the type of coach he needed to get him over that hump. And sometimes that's what happens. You know, and KD in this NBA as a free agent chose the best place to win. Because at the end of the day, when you're that great, isn't that what you're going to be judged by? Where else could he have gone to truly compete for championships like that?
You know what?
Outside of OKC.
Yeah, and you know what I think it is? It's almost like he well, we know he did this. It was a cheat code, right? So when you look at KD's career when it's all over and you put the numbers up, you put the achievements up, you put the titles up, because more than like he's going to win more than one at Golden State. And you look at that, but like, man, that was a – man, this dude, like – What a career, man. Multiple titles, scoring champion, MVP. Like, this dude had it all. But then you kind of, when you really dive into, like, that career and start to break it out, you be like, oh, well, he kind of cheated to get there. Now, you could say LeBron did the same thing because he did. You know, he went to Miami, and, yeah, that first year was, you know, nip and tuck between him and Wade, and they went there and they lost, and then Wade said, okay, here, you got the keys, and then all of a sudden, you know, things started to change, and they went back to back. They lose the fourth, and then LeBron. But what LeBron did was LeBron, you know, Wade started to fall off. LeBron carried the team. We've seen LeBron carry not only the Heat, but multiple teams, right? And then he went to Cleveland, and he went against the juggernaut that is the Golden State Warriors, and with the aid of Kyrie hitting that one big shot, he won a title. Right, everywhere we see LeBron doing, we see what LeBron does, like, it's always on him. He's recognized as the best player in the world. And at one point, we were sitting there like, man, we were like, man, KD is right there behind him. And for a while, KD's career was on that trajectory. And then he got hurt. Then Westbrook came along. Westbrook became the alpha dog. And then KD was like, all right, I'm out. And it's like, no, that's... It's the Michael Jordanification, I guess, of basketball. Like, that's not what we want to see because of what we've seen.
Ken, that's why I completely disagree. Because of all of the movement, that's what engages the fans. Because now look at all of these possibilities, right? I completely disagree. I think KD going to Golden State was one of the best things to happen to basketball. And I told you guys that it was going to happen before it even happened. Is one of the best things to happen to basketball because super teams are great for the NBA. The collection of talent accumulated on one team is great for the NBA because it sets the bar high. It means that you have to pull out all stops to compete because there's certain teams, and it doesn't matter what era the NBA, there's going to be a handful of teams truly competing, a handful of playoff teams, and a handful of teams saying, you know what, we got to figure this stuff out. But at the top, and even some of those playoff contending teams, it makes them pull out the stops, especially now with free agency, with trades. Don't we want to see Jahlil Okafor get a shot somewhere, especially on a playoff contender? Would we not like to see that? Would we not like to see possibly Mark Gasol go somewhere and help somebody out? Ken, the movement in the NBA, the fact that teams or players themselves can move so transient now in the NBA is a good thing because I believe that you're still going to have certain staples, right? Like, I think Kyrie is going to finish his career in Boston. I think that that's what's going to happen. I think that Kawhi is a staple. Steph Curry is a staple. Those guys ain't going nowhere. James Harden is going to retire Houston Rockets.
But those are their teams, though. That's
just like, but just like in yesteryear, the Hakeem Olajuwons, and he didn't finish with Houston. But the Michael Jordans, he didn't finish with Chicago, right? Like those guys stayed primarily with their squads because they're the guy.
But so that was their team.
But we talking about superstars, and we talking about role players.
We're talking about a superstar that's a role player on a juggernaut team.
He's not a role player.
No, I got to disagree with you on that, Ken. You began by asking, are you tripping? I think you are. I understand where you're coming from, but even in me understanding where you're coming from, I am able to tell you that you're tripping. And here's why. Because Durant didn't just show up with that team last year just to be a part. Yeah, he was an integral part of them winning. But let's rewind back to the finals, bro. If you don't have Kevin Durant on that team playing the way that he did, they don't win the finals.
Oh, period. They'll still probably
1,000.
No, Ken. Hell no, Ken.
Triple double. Kyrie was giving
exactly. Ken, we watch those finals. The difference in the finals. Keep in mind, there wasn't much difference between the year before when LeBron and them came back and this particular finals. The difference was Kevin Durant. Keep in mind, his numbers were better than LeBron's, and I'm not going to sit here and say that he outplayed LeBron, but from him, all the way from him hitting that game-winning shot to each game in, a game out, I mean, no, the difference was Kevin Durant. So, he didn't just show up to, you know, get a participation trophy. If he's not on that team, I'm not going to say Golden State gets swept, but Golden State loses in six.
1,000. You know why? Because Cleveland had a matchup for every other person on that Golden State team.
Exactly.
LeBron couldn't do nothing with KD. Shump could do nothing with KD. Nobody KD was the only difference in that game. And like I said before, right? Like, they had Harrison Barnes. Mm-hmm. If you give Harrison Barnes superpowers, he's KD. That's the difference. For real.
I like that. That's a good one.
Superpowers, he's KD. And that was the difference.
Yeah, he didn't just show up just to take the participation.
Yes, he did. Harrison Barnes was a participant.
KD was a superstar. There's a difference, Ken. He took the game over. It wasn't Steph. It was KD.
Yeah.
Game in, game out.
Yeah, it wasn't Steph. It wasn't Clay. It wasn't Draymond. He was the guy. If you go back and look at this before we finish this podcast, go back and look at the stats. I mean, he kept them consistent. Clay had a game that he was off. Steph had a game that he was off, but he was able to carry this team. And again, he is going to be the difference maker between this year's Golden State team and whoever they face in the finals, whether it be Cleveland or Boston. And it's just he's just the difference maker. I'm not going to go as far as saying that he's better than LeBron, but has he underachieved? Hell no, he hadn't underachieved.
But he could have been better than LeBron.
I don't know that anybody could have been better than LeBron. LeBron is the best player that we've seen in this generation. I don't think that Kevin Durant, when you look at the totality of what LeBron was when he came in to the league, 20 years old, fresh out of high school, 25-5 first game out. Nobody had ever seen anything like that before. We and I'm gonna do a podcast on this. I don't understand why people don't love and you don't necessarily have to be a fan, but love and celebrate the talent that is LeBron James. This guy is phenomenal. And I think the problem is going to happen is 10, 15 years from now, people are going to really, really. It sounds almost sacrilegious for me to say this, but I'm gonna say it anyway. I don't know that his game is appreciated as it should be. That being said, Kevin Durant, no, he has not underachieved at all. If Kevin Durant does not go to Golden State, we'd be talking about him like he's Carmelo, the guy who, with all his talent, couldn't get a ring, and that's what he would be. But no, nah, he.
But that's he, why he's I think he took the easy paper. Way out, and that's why I think.
But Ken, that's where the NBA is at this point. Well, I mean, people said the same thing about LeBron. At the end of the day, Ken, 10, 15, 20 years from now, Nobody's going to care about that stuff. They're going to talk about what he did, what his stats look like, all of that stuff. We don't talk about the fact that Ray Allen went to this team or went to that team or whomever went where. People don't look at it like that. They don't. You know, you just look at the bottom line result.
And maybe underachieve is not the right word, right? But the way that if you think about it, the league belonged to LeBron, and then it mm-hmm. belonged for a hot minute to Steph Curry, and you know we wanted it to belong to Kevin Durant, and he was close to snatching it. I think the MVP season or the year he put up what year was that? 32 or something?
2014.
Yeah, he was like right there, man. Like he was right there. It was like it was his for the taking. And
you know what's the difference, Ken?
What's that?
He's not the leader LeBron is.
Right.
Okay.
He's just simply not the leader. And that's the difference between them. Because if you're looking at skills and attributes, KD probably at this point right now checks more boxes than LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
But LeBron, the leader, his presence. I'm still on both ends of the court. His willingness to be like, we're not going to lose, is different than KD's. It just is from a leader perspective, right? And then we also question KD's clutchness in terms of free throw shooting, shot making, even shot taking at times, right? And LeBron has gotten the same criticism, but LeBron, in terms of the entirety of a game, how he affects the game, I don't think we've seen that outside of Magic Johnson.
And you know what? You may not. You know, I think it goes back to – no, I'm not going to go that far. But, you know, before I forget, man, we forgot to get B in this. B, what's your take on Ken tripping again? Your take on KD's underachieving or not and his overall legacy?
And I think it may be more of a legacy.
Can't let B talk, man.
Yeah, I was about to say. I think Ken thought of this maybe because of my assumption is that the fact that KD went to a 7-3 and 9 team mm-hmm. the year before he was one game away from being in the NBA Finals with a pretty good squad in OKC. So I don't know if Ken's basing it off of that, but I mean, I think. Besides him going to a 73 win squad, I think he's been clearly the second best player, you know, in the last 10 years, you know, 10 plus so years in the league. We always say LeBron, it's LeBron's league. KD is always the number two guy. Even though KD feels that the torch is passed to him when he hit that shot over James, I think he's just still feeling the high from finally getting a championship. Mm-hmm. Not so fast, KD. But I wouldn't really say is underachieve. Let's have this conversation when he retires. I think.
Right.
I think that's what I would like to think about. Let's talk about the career once it's all said and done. As he's underachieved, but I think as of right now, I think KD does he have a potential to possibly be better than LeBron? I mean, at one point we was like, man, like when I remember it was one year when LeBron was at Miami. I think it was either his last year or second to last year, and KD was just like the way he was just doing whatever he wanted to LeBron.
You already
just,
know, B. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, me and Feeble had talked about it at the time. He was like, dog, this dude KD is getting scarier and scarier because he's doing whatever he wanted with LeBron. Like that was the crazy thing that we saw. Like that dude could have been the best, but is he the best? No, it's still LeBron James is still the best basketball player in the world. But, I mean, so the fact that he didn't live up to the whole best basketball player, is he underachieved? Let's see what he holds. You know, let's see his old man game. Let's see how he does the remainder of his career.
Yeah, because he's just getting into his prime. Right. I think Durant's, 27, 28, 29 years old?
Yeah, before we get into the whole, is he underachieved? So let's just hold off on that and then before we make that statement.
True indeed. From time to time, man, we get people, a lot of our listeners – will send us information. They'll have questions. A lot of times people hit us up on Twitter. But we got a question from a listener on our Facebook page. You can follow us there, facebook.com/deadendsports, among all of the other places where you can find us. So this question comes in from Eric. He said, "Hey guys, new fan, love the show. Keep up the good work. I have a question for you guys on your next show. If you have time, can you please talk about the sports journalists on TV, i.e. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, Colin Cowherd, Skip Bayless, and others? I want to know your pros and cons for them, where you rank them the best, the worst. Love the show. Keep up the good work." Appreciate the comments, Eric. For all of you listening, if you have any questions that you have for us, feel free to hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, everywhere. You know where to find us. Instagram, where we at? You know, YouTube as well. So let's start there, man. I guess the sports personalities that we see on TV, who are some of the best and you're some of the worst? I guess I'll go first. Some of my favorites, that's a good question. You know, I probably have more. I don't like guys like, I can't stand Jason Whitlock. He's a coon. He is. I mean, he's one of the few people in sports. Like, if I saw him on the street, I literally would slap him when I saw him. I'm not really into the sports personalities per se. I like the guys who call the games, if you will. Well, as far as sports personality, big fan of Bomani Jones. Huge fan of Bomani. I listen to his sports talk show every day and his podcast. A really, really cool brother. He reminds me a lot of what we do here. Bomani's probably my favorite. Like I said, as far as Stephen A, I really don't pay attention, a lot of attention to Stephen A. I think Max Kellerman's pretty decent. That's about it, really. There's not too many people that I really flock to. I like game announcers. I know he wasn't talking about game announcers, but I like game announcers like some of the ones that do the college games and a couple of guys on the NFL games as well. But as far as sports personalities, not really any major favorites, really. I like the TNT crew. I love them. Those are probably the only sports personalities I really like. So I'd say the TNT crew, as well as Bomani Jones, dislike the coon Jason Whitlock. That's what I got. Ken, what about you? Who do you like and dislike out there as far as sports personalities?
Oh, I watch and follow them all, man. Thanks. Podcast help out a lot because, you know, some of these shows come on at the same time. So I'll start with the best, the ones that I like. I like when Stephen A. Smith is black. I like black Stephen A. Smith when he speaks up for the brothers. But sometimes Stephen A. Smith tries to play a little bit, play to the middle sometimes a little bit too much. But when he's black, because he has such a huge platform, and whether people like him or not, he commands attention and people listen. So I like him. I like Max Kellerman mainly because I like how he intellectualizes everything and the type of discourse that he brings to the conversation. And I like that he challenges Stephen A. Smith in a way that Skip Bayless never did. Like, Skip Bayless, we all say, is a troll. So he throws out troll talking points. Max Kellerman comes with a lot more than that. And it really provides an interesting dynamic. So I do like what he brings to the show. Chris Carter is really quickly becoming one of my favorites because he has a little bit of, he has Shannon Sharp in him, and he also can, you know, talk from a very intellectual standpoint. But he's no nonsense. He call it the way it is, and he's quick on his toes, and he be getting at Nick Wright sometimes because Nick Wright is, you know, Chris Carter played, Nick Wright didn't. So Nick Wright is like Skip Bayless without the trolling. So Nick Wright is very analytics-based. He's going to talk his way around everything. So he has a little bit of Max Kellerman in him. So I think that they play off each other well because Chris Carter is like, no, there's no pressure. Every game in the NFL is pressure. So it's not pressure on Dak. So the talking points that the sports media has, Chris Carter just be like, nah, forget all that. I'm going to tell you what's real because I've been in the league and I've been in those locker rooms and I've been in those games. So I like that. Eric Davis is a sharp brother, man. Eric Davis is good. He'd be on Speak for Yourself. And like you, Kyle, Bomani Jones. Bomani Jones is one of my favorites, too, because he can go highbrow with you and intellectualize everything, or he can be a straight-up brother with you. So and sometimes he can do it all. He can code switch just like that. So I like him. The worst, obviously Skip Bayless, because his show is just propaganda for his favorite teams. And at times when he first started out, I thought he had good points. But over time, you know, you can just see through his arguments, and they're weak arguments. He's on my worst list. Rob Parker, he clowns a little bit too much for me. He's the class clown. Obviously, Will Kane. I just very conservative. Bring that conservative red state talking points to the show, and it just rubs me the wrong way, because he tries to put things in a certain corner that's hard for people to pull out, and his talking points he's the worst, man. He's up there with Jason Whitlock to me. He's really climbing that ladder. Jason Whitlock is the worst of them all, for obvious reasons. And I think Colin Cowherd is on my worst list now. You know, at times he's good, but at other times I think he tries to jump ahead of stuff. I think he tends to find stories and twist them to form a narrative that doesn't really exist. And like Will Kane and Skip Bayless, he can spin a talking point to fit his narrative, or he'll completely ignore a point that nullifies everything that he just said. Like, he'll just make up something, a good narrative or talking point that he has. Somebody that played the game will come in there and break it down with facts, and he'll just completely ignore it and go back to what he said. And I'm like, what are you doing? So those are my best and worst sports media personalities out there.
FIFA, what about you, man? Your best and your worst sports personalities out here today.
You know, I had a slight screw face listening to Ken explain how he feels about Cowherd now. Because I still think that overall what Cowherd does is more difficult than any of the other sports people that I watch or listen to, mainly because he has so much time to fill. And in that, I think he has become the best storyteller. And yeah, he does have narratives and he does have his own beliefs, but I'm cool with that because I want somebody to believe in what they believe in because they've been right the majority of the time. And Cowherd has been right, and we've all been wrong. I know I've been wrong, and I'll be the first to admit it, or at least the second to admit it whenever I'm wrong, but I'll be the first to admit it when I'm right. And he's the same way, and that's how we all are. So I'm okay with that. I like what he does because he does something that nobody else does. He fills almost 2 hours worth of space. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, and that's crazy. A lot of storytelling. Yeah, he brings a lot of people on and, you know, they talk about his ideas and how he sees certain things and stuff like that. But, you know, just to fill that amount of space and do it how he's done it for as consistently as long as he's done it, I got to give him props. And to me, that's why.
I see the agenda, Ralph. He has an agenda. I see it.
Oh, man. All right, Ken.
He's good, though. He's good. Storytelling and the ability to make his narrative and to be able to break things down and make it relatable, put it in a way that you can see it. He's talented. Exactly. I give him credit for that.
He is. Shannon Sharpe is quickly climbing up my ladder of one of my favorites.
I forgot
favorites.
About him. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because you know what? Like, you know, we a black show, but he a nigga. On national TV early in the morning, man. I love it. You know what I'm saying? Shannon, man, let me get some of that yak. I'll take a black too. But, yeah, man, Shannon's up there because at first, I didn't know how he was going to fare with the other sports, but I love his approach. I think the main thing I like about Shannon is the fact that he doesn't allow Skip to get away with anything. Skip. Skip. Yes. Skip. Skip.
Skip.
Come on, Skip. Skip. he'll let them know. And I love that because I feel like Stephen A, when he was with Skip, it was just kind of, you know, back and forth. And he can make, you know, Stephen A fly off the wire. And, you know, and it was cool. It was entertaining. But Shannon just, he sticks on his talking points, on his stats. And he be breaking all that Skip Bayless stuff down. So I really enjoy watching him now. Another one of my favorites. I like Chris Broussard only because he entertains me. Not really? Because of anything else. Sometimes I feel that, you know, it's kind of like Kid Cudi. You know, like maybe he's not your cup of tea for everybody, but you know.
Did you say Kid Cudi?
Yeah, like Kid Cudi, man. Okay. Like, you know, some people think he's great. Some people think he's whack as hell. You know, I think that's how Chris Broussard is kind of viewed.
Shout out to Cudi.
Huh? I'm not saying he's the equivalent of Cudi.
No. You just kind of threw me for a loop. I'm with you. I like Cudi.
Yeah. I like Cudi too. I mess with Cudi. That's why I like Chris Broussard. But yeah, man. You know, he's cool. Sometimes he'd be way off, but you know, he's cool. I like Louis Riddick from ESPN.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, I like his perspective, man. And he talks to you very stern. You know, so it's kind of like when he speaks, you have to pay attention. And I like how eloquent he is. I like how he breaks things down. I like the fact that he has it from a GM perspective. And you can tell he has a lot of genuine connections in the NFL. So if it's coming from his lips, it's the real deal. Let me see. Who else do I like? Damn, man. There's so many. Shit, I'll go to who I don't like. Jason Whitlock. Man, boy. I found this dude damn near like 10 years ago. And from the first time I read an article till right now, I feel exactly the same way about this guy. Mm. Man, this guy is the biggest coon, literally and figuratively. This guy, oh my God. I just don't get it. Rob Parker, Ken touched on that guy. He's like a joke. I don't know, like, who's his agent? Because his agent needs more money than Rob Parker. Because if you can still get this guy on TV, you know, like consistently, bro, you deserve a bonus. You really do, because he is the worst. Like I feel like he be on the yak. Too much damn yak when he be getting on these damn TV shows, man. Skip. I'm not going to say he's the worst or he's on the worst list, but you know, he don't really debate with facts, man. He debates all with his with just pride and favoritism, you know what I'm saying? And I can't really respect that all the way. You know, because and that's the reason why I like him with Shannon, because Shannon be shutting him the hell up. Sometimes Skip just doesn't have anything else to say. And yep. It's more apparent now. You know, So I guess I gotta put Skip on the bad list just for that, yeah. Because he Shannon be shutting him the hell up. So I you know who honestly I like, and he's climbing up the list, and I think he needs to get some more FaceTime. Jim Jackson.
Yeah,
I like
he's
Jim
good.
Jackson on Fox Sports Net, man. I like his breakdown. He comes more so from a player's perspective. I always like that perspective. And I like his breakdowns, and also mainly because me and him agree a lot on the basketball players, you know, and what he says, how highly he speaks on Embiid. I've been trying to tell y'all guys for years now. Y'all know nobody really wanted to listen, but you know, but those, I'll leave it there.
Yo, what about you, B? Who do you like and dislike?
Dislike Jason Whitlock and Will Kane easily. Both of those are like the top two folks I do not care about at all. Favorites, of course, is Shannon. I mean, whenever you put out the Black and Miles and Yak, man, you my favorite. You are my favorite. Shannon is that dude, man. I like Shannon, man. And I like how he never lets Skips get away with his BS, man. Never. So, Shannon and who else I like? And Chris Carter. Yeah, Shannon and Chris Carter. I mean, I like the fact that they both come from a player's perspective, someone who's been there, done that. You know, you can't – it, It ain't like these guys has been back pushing papers and stuff for the longest, never played a single sport in their life.
Right.
I like the fact that Shannon and Chris Carter brings a player perspective. Same way with Isaiah Thomas on the NBA channel, man. Like,
yeah.
A lot of those guys, Steve Smith, you know, when they're talking about basketball and talking about certain things, I love it because I know they're coming from a place from experience and not just guys who just been, you know, sitting back and probably been a lame throughout their whole high school and college years and not finally have a chance to rip NBA players or football players or whatever. And like Kyle said, I like the TNT crew too. I like, you know, Shaq.
Oh, yeah, love
you. Barkley. I like the 21, KG, Area 21. I mean, I like all them, man. That whole Ernie. I mean, I like that whole TNT cast. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I don't really watch a lot of other people like that.
And Chris Carter, black too, man. Like, because he talks with. Yeah. Like, it sounds aggressive. And yep. If you're not used to talking to black people, you can be taken aback from it. But but it's not the way it goes across. What's up, Ralph?
And B, I like the fact that you pointed out the NBA crew. I forgot about them. Not the TNT crew, because I wanted everybody.
Talking about, Isaiah, Steve Smith.
My favorite is
Steve. I love them.
I love Steve Smith because he be breaking down the plays up under the rim. He be giving dudes nicknames. Steve Smith is low-key one of the best dudes on there. But the reason why I brought them up wasn't because of Steve Smith. It was because of Rick Kamla. I really mess with Rick Kamla.
Kamla's good.
He's really good. He's well-versed across multiple sports because he also runs 92, or he's on 92.9 FM. You know what I'm saying? He's on Sports Talk Radio there, too. So he does that. He does NBA TV. Like, he's just all over the place. And I got mad respect for his game because he's a hustler. In this sports game, he's a hustler.
True indeed. So yeah, thanks for the question, Eric. Like I said, if anyone else has any questions, we'll, you know, shoot them to us and we'll try to get them on the podcast as well. And you know, those are some of our favorites. And obviously, if you listen to us, we're your favorites too. So trust and believe that Dead End Sports could be on any medium doing the same thing these guys are doing. And we definitely appreciate the love. Before we get out of here, man, let's do some One Gotta Go. These are a couple of things that we got from @OneGottaGo on Twitter from the mind of the homie Eclectic. So let's do OneGottaGo. It's pretty simple, pretty popular game. You pick one. One has to go forever. You can debate it if you want, or you can be like Ken and get rid of a classic song like he did last week, which we won't name. So let's start right there. All right, man. OneGottaGo. Let's go. NBA point guards. B, I'll start with you. Steve Francis, Baron Davis, Jason Kidd, Gary Payton.
Steve Francis.
One gotta go. You getting rid of franchise?
Yeah, Steve Francis.
Okay. Ken, what about you?
Oh, yeah. Franchise.
Okay.
I used to like him too, man.
Same here.
Yeah, I mess with the franchise. Definitely one of my favorite point guards to watch, but he just didn't do it long enough. GP, you can't take him off. J Kidd, you can't take them off. So it really comes down to Baron Davis and Steve Francis. B Diddy did it with more teams.
I agree. Baron Davis had, before his knees got bad, he had crazy bounce.
And you could argue, to me,
could be.
And people might appreciate this, he's probably got like maybe the second or third best handles I ever seen, dude, as a point guard.
Oh, his handles.
People sleep on Baron Davis' handles.
Oh, yeah, he did it.
Baron Davis'
handles. Hey, Baron Davis. Him and Kyrie, they up there with me, man, as far as like favorite ball handlers ever. Yes, dude. Like, people sleep on Baron Davis' ball handling skills.
You know what? I just thought of one. FIFO. You'll appreciate this. Big men, Mark Gasol, Carl Anthony Towns, DeMarcus Cousins, Joel Embiid. One gotta go.
Man, get the hell Mark Gasol up on that list. He don't belong on that list. What kind of question is this, Kyle? Why are you
doing
the one gotta go?
Ken, what about you? Gasol, it's more like Carl Anthony Towns, Embiid, or DeMarcus Cousins.
Man, it's more like the one that never belonged, and that's Gasol. You know what? I'll never forgive him for what he got, what he did to that brother in Memphis, man. And I know they have a history of doing that to coaches, white and black. But nah, man, I'm not for Fizdale. Nah, Gasol's on my naughty list, man. I don't like him anymore.
What about you, B? Which one of these big men got to get out of the paint?
Gasol.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Gasol, man. I could say Embiid, you know, because he's never healthy, but. You know, when healthy, Embiid is great.
150 million 30 games. That's all you needed.
Hey, man, I just want to be able to talk about him without saying when healthy. I don't know if you've been following. I love this little beef he's got going on with Hassan Whiteside. That is so, it's so funny. They got a little Twitter beef going.
You know why? Because I agree with the one thing that I read on that whole Twitter beef. I know he always goes back and forth with him. I haven't read everything. But when Embiid said, your plus minus sucks, all you care about is stats, he's 1,000% right with Hassan. And I like Hassan as a player. But if Hassan focused more so on his overall game and really impacting the team, the Miami, he could be a way better squad.
Hassan, he came back and said, talk to me when you playing back-to-back games.
Yeah, of course. You know, that's the only dig, though.
All right, let's take it to hip-hop. Ken, let's do two. Let's do two, and then we'll wrap it up. Hip-hop albums. I'm almost afraid to start with you, Ken. It Was Written, Nas. Reasonable Doubt, Sean Carter. Me Against the World, Tupac Shakur. Only Built for Cuban Links, Raekwon. One Gotta Go.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, Jesus.
this guy.
Damn.
It Was Written, Nas. Reasonable Doubt, Jay-Z. Me Against the World, Tupac Amaru Shakur. Only Built for Cuban Links, Ghostface, a.k.a. The Purple Tape.
It Was Written.
This guy.
Blasphemous. Get him off the phone, please.
You know what? We're going to stop having him in on these discussions, man.
Each album serves a different purpose, man. Like, me, Tupac, I know, like.
You said It Was Written?
Yeah.
I know, like, man. I just,
that's top two Nas albums.
FIFO, what about you, man?
You know, okay, look. So first off, Jay-Z not going nowhere for everybody that know me. That's not happening. It Was Written is definitely not going nowhere because that's my favorite Nas album. So it comes down to Pac and Raekwon. And I think I got to let Pac go.
Okay. What about you, B? Me Against the World, Only Built for Cuban Links. Reasonable Doubt, It Was Written. One Gotta Go.
Me Against the World. I mean,
I can't believe y'all filibustering over on this.
I know, man. I feel bad, man. I feel bad.
Hey, man.
That's my favorite Pac album.
You took the words right out of my mouth. It's my favorite Tupac album, but it has to go.
But It Was Written is definitely second, though. If I had to pick a second place.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I love It Was Written.
I do too. I don't know how it's FIFO's favorite Nas album, but we'll discuss that another time.
I love that album, but yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with Ken. I mean, you know, Nas, him and Biggie both dropped the album in '94, and you see what happens commercially. What happened, and Nas went with that formula,
right?
Yeah, he gave in. He went with that. He went with the Biggie formula.
Had to get the checks, man. Had to get the checks. Me Against the World. Again, my favorite Tupac album, but it does not stand against these other three giants. All right, last one. MCs, lyrically. We just talking lyrics. I'm gonna let Ken go last. He piss us off. B, I'll start with you. Andre 3000, Marshall Mathers, Black Thought, Jay-Z, lyrically, One Gotta Go.
Hmm.
Black and Andre not going nowhere. That's let's get that out the way. Eminem.
Okay. Detroit versus everybody. Hey B, this is like the third or fourth time you didn't eliminate somebody from Detroit, man. You might not be able to go home, man.
Whatever.
FIFO, what about you, man?
I was thinking about it, and just like B, Black Thought and Andre ain't going nowhere. Right? Like, so then it comes down to J and M. Both of these guys are beasts. But when it comes down to it, I feel Jay's rhymes more than I feel M. So it's more relatable. So I'm picking Jay. I'm sticking with Jay.
Yeah, you stick with Jay. I got you. All right, Kenneth.
Oh, man. I'm pro brother, man.
I'm pro brother.
Yeah. I thought about Jay. I really considered Jay because there's some questionable moments, but M has his. But right, at the end of the day, I'm being racist, man. I'm gonna go with the black guy over the white guy.
He said I'm being racist.
Oh, man. Please send all tweets to Ken or Twitter. I'm gonna complete it, man. It's M for me, and I love M, but 3000 and Black Thought ain't going nowhere. And it's a damn shame that we can't get a solo album from Andre or Black Thought, but that's another story for another day. And don't send me no mentions about The Love Below, because that shit don't count. That's not a solo album. M gotta go. All right, man. So thanks for playing along with that. It's time for our final thoughts. Once again, we want to thank you all for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you download, subscribe, and pass the word. Dead End Sports. We do this podcast every week. So time for our final thoughts. My man FIFO's up first. FIFO, what you got?
Where do I start? I'm gonna keep it with the college football, man. UGA, man. Look, I kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier in the show. We need a championship, man. The state of Georgia. Look, we've been on a dry spell. It's been since what when the Braves won last? Mid-90s?
Yeah, 91, something like that.
Ooh, man, it's been a very long time. UGA, look, I know I'm putting more pressure on you guys. You had your loss. It was late in the season, but you made it back. Learn from that experience. We need a championship. At least you see who's begging? You see the guy that said don't trust no Georgia team? I'm trusting in you. Please, we need this. Do not lose in the first round. Because I swear for God, I will never, ever, 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 ever picking another team in the state of Georgia. So it all rides on you, UGA. You better win.
No doubt. What about you, B? Your final thought.
Miguel Cotto fought his last fight of his career this past Saturday, and unfortunately it ended with a loss. But it was still an entertaining, good fight nonetheless. But just want to take the time to give props to Miguel Cotto, man. Started out kind of like in super welterweight, mainly fought in the middleweight. Kind of went back and forth from super welterweight to middleweight, and never ducked anyone. Always had respect and class for his opponents. Was a very classy guy. Very, very classy guy, man. And put Puerto Rico on his back when everyone was loving Tito, and he just put it on his back, man. And he carried it right after Tito, man. So respect to Miguel Cotto. Had a wonderful career. With the reception of the L that he took this past Saturday to probably not so popular boxer. He fought them all. He didn't duck nobody. All his losses was from guys, Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao. He lost to respectable guys. You know what I'm saying? Guys that you'd be like, well, you can't win them all. So yeah, just want to say respect to Cotto, man. Miguel Cotto. I hope whatever he has in his retired life, whatever he do from here on out, is successful and everything. So I just want to give a shout out to Miguel Cotto. He had a great career.
No doubt. Great career. Salute to him. Ken, what about you? Final thought.
I came into today's show saving my final thought for Captain Sneak on Twitter. But then I realized that if you have to find a clip of a 600-word response from Belichick about punts, kind of proves my point that Belichick really don't give you nothing. So I'm not going to waste this time, this space for that. Instead, I'm going to go to the NBA. Play the rookies. Play the rookies. I think this last draft class has talent in it, future talent in the NBA, and Sacramento and Phoenix, play your guys. Look at what Donovan Mitchell is doing in Utah, a guy that just popped up out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You know why he's balling? It's because they decided they're going to play him. Trano in Phoenix, I don't even know who's coaching Sacramento. Play your guys. Let some of these young guys play. Their rotations are all over the place. They're trying to play veterans that either don't want to play or have no business playing, like Garrett Temple and George Hill and somebody else in Sacramento. Play your rookies. Let these guys get in, get on the court, learn the game, and prosper. Let's see what these guys got. So, that's all I got to say. Let's see what these young guys do, especially on some of these teams that's going nowhere. Put your guys out there. Live and let learn.
True indeed. True indeed. Great points by everybody. My final thought will be on the college football playoff. When the announcement was made on this past Sunday of the four teams that were selected to be in the final four, if you will, I heard a lot of people talking about, we should expand this to 8 games. And we heard that chatter last year. We should expand that to 8 games. And I'm like, my message to you, shut up. The reason why I say that is because if you look at it from a practical standpoint, we coming into this past weekend, we had about 8 teams vying for 4 spots. Now, you could make a case that, you know, two or three of the spots were already sold up. But for the most part, we had some teams, more than just the 4 that were selected, that had a legitimate chance at vying for those 4 positions. Here's the thing. If you expand the playoffs to 8 games, what's going to happen? Excuse me. If you expand the playoffs to 8 teams, what's going to happen? When are you going to play that final round of games? These kids at some point got to go to school. They're already missing their break, you know, to participate and to practice for these games, their Christmas break, if you will. But more importantly, you're not paying them. So unless you're going to pay these kids, stop the chatter about an 8-game playoff, because everybody's making money except for the kids who are playing. Everybody's making money. We just talked earlier about Jimbo Fisher getting a $75 million contract, guaranteed $75 million contract. When the bowls are announced, they also let you know how much the payouts are on each bowls. These championship bowl games, these payouts are running about $20 million per team. So Clemson's going to get $20 million. Oklahoma's going to get $20 million. All of these schools are going to get this money and the players get nothing. And you could spare me the talk about the free education, because it ain't free, because they're having to work for it. So, nah, man, pay the players. If you want to extend it, pay the players. I got to give a big shout out to my man, Devin James, from Florida State, who Florida State finally made a bowl game. I think they're playing in some bowl game in Shreveport. He's like, nah, I'm good. I'm not playing in that. He's a senior. He will be heading for the draft. I don't know if he's a senior. I think he's a redshirt junior. My point is that more players like this, if you're going to be a first, a second, a third rounder, and you're not playing in that in the playoff, I'd sit these bowl games out. What are you getting? Why should you play? For who? For what? To get hurt? Man, please pay the players. Thanks again for checking out another edition of the Dead End Sports Podcast. Once again, for B, for FIFO, for Ken, I'm your host, 12 Kyle. We'll catch you guys next week. Peace.